Pakistan's former Prime Minister Imran Khan is set to appear in court following clashes between his supporters and security forces this week over an arrest warrant against him. South Korea moves to normalize a military pact with Japan 2 days after a summit aimed at rebuilding security ties. Also ahead, the British Interior Minister is in Rwanda to discuss a migration deal that has drawn widespread criticism over the rights of asylum seekers. Welcome. Our top story this hour, Pakistan's former Prime Minister Imran Khan is set to appear before the High Court in the capital Islamabad later in the day. That's according to his lawyer in Lahore. Imran Khan is accused of unlawfully selling state gifts given to him by foreign dignitaries when he was Prime Minister in 2018-2022. He denies any wrongdoing and had repeatedly refused to attend hearings on the case, citing safety concerns. Khan decided to show up in the High Court on Saturday after it cancelled an arrest warrant against him. The warrant triggered clashes between security forces and Khan supporters in his hometown Lahore earlier this week. The legal proceedings against Khan began after he was ousted from office in a parliamentary vote early last year. Since then, he has been holding protests across the country, calling for early elections. The government has so far refused his demand. Our correspondent in Islamabad, Nazo Kazmi, explains why Imran Khan is concerned about his safety and how the government is responding to that.
He's repeatedly saying that his life is under serious danger, and that's the key issue. We have seen that the former Prime Minister of Pakistan, Benazir Bhutto, has been assassinated in the Rawalpindi, the sister city of Islamabad, and this, during the same election, really. So the demand from the Khan is quite obvious that his life is under danger. And we have seen that he was attacked in Punjab and he was leading a rally. So in such circumstances, the government is determined, and they are repeatedly saying that we want to protect Imran Khan from these assassination attempts, but he should follow the rule of law in the country. So this is, I mean, the point where there is a conflict between the government and Imran Khan at the moment, because the PTI party, they are struggling for what they call the rule of law in the country. And at the same time, when it comes to the matter comes to the courts and appearing before the courts, so this is, I mean, something very strange that Imran Khan is avoiding to appear before court.
North Korea says hundreds of thousands of its citizens have volunteered to join or re-enlist in the nation's military to fight against the United States. According to North Korea's state newspaper, 800,000 students and workers across the country expressed their will to counter the U.S. The report said the number of people willing to enlist is just for Friday. This comes after the country launched its largest ever intercontinental ballistic missile on Thursday. Pyongyang said the Hwasong-17 missile was launched to demonstrate what it called a tough response posture amid the ongoing military drills by the U.S. and South Korea. North Korea considers the exercises as acts of hostility and rehearsal for an invasion of its territory. And South Korea says it will fully implement a key military intelligence sharing pact with Japan. That comes 2 days after the two countries held a summit in Tokyo on Thursday to rebuild security and economy. Economic, that is, ties. South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol told Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida that he wanted a complete normalization of their 2016 military agreement. The pact enables the two U.S. allies to share military secrets. Seoul had threatened to scrap the deal in 2019 as relations with Tokyo soured, partly over a trade dispute. The two are concerned about what they see as security challenges posed by North Korea and China. Pyongyang and Beijing. They've repeatedly denied, or have, I should say, repeatedly denied posing any such challenge. Now, an attorney for former U.S. President Donald Trump has been ordered to testify before a grand jury probing Trump's handling of classified documents related to his time in office. The ruling issued by a federal judge requires Evan Corcoran to provide additional testimony. That's because his communications with Trump may have been related to criminal conduct. Back in January, Corcoran declined to respond to investigators' questions, citing attorney-client privilege. Now, the latest ruling has removed the privilege, considering a crime fraud exception. The U.S. Justice Department is investigating Trump for keeping classified defense records at his Florida home. He has denied that, accusing the department of a witch hunt against him. Following the latest ruling, Trump's spokesperson said they will fight the Justice Department. Israeli violence has claimed the life of another Palestinian in the occupied West Bank. The regime's forces opened fire on a Palestinian man near the city of Ramallah. The man was identified as 23-year-old Yazan Omar Jamal Khassab. He succumbed to his injuries in hospital. The Israeli military claims Khassab tried to stab the regime's troops. Israeli forces and settlers have ramped up their violence against Palestinians in recent months. The latest death brings to nearly 90 the number of Palestinians killed across the West Bank this year. 17 of those were children. Palestinians across the West Bank and Al-Quds have staged a 24-hour general strike to slam the recent killings in Jenin.
This is about helping our country by voting against this unfair and ineffective pension reform. It is about preserving our trampled parliamentary democracy and social democracy. It is about respecting and listening to our fellow compatriots, 80% of whom want this motion passed. Finally, the vote on this motion will help us emerge from a deep political crisis.
In other news, that was related to France, where a no-confidence motion against the French President Emmanuel Macron's overhaul of the retirement age has so far garnered 91 signatories from five opposition groups, which is nearly 200 votes short. The MPs who have put down their names have called on their colleagues to be responsible and back the statement. France has been plagued by paralyzing protests and sprawling strikes since the president announced his pension reform plans in January. Macron says he can only keep the system from collapsing by imposing the changes, but opponents say the overhaul is extremely unfair. Time now for our news review segment, where we take a look at one of our stories in more detail. British Interior Minister Suella Braverman is in Rwanda to discuss a controversial deal that sends migrants seeking asylum in the UK to the African nation. Braverman has said her trip aims to discuss plans to operationalize the deal shortly. London clinched the agreement with Kigali in April last year to send tens of thousands of migrants on a one-way trip to Rwanda. The plan hit a roadblock as the first deportation flight was cancelled by an injunction from the European Court of Human Rights. And in December, London's High Court ruled the scheme was lawful. The plan has drawn widespread criticism both in the UK and outside, including from the UN Refugee Agency. London says it wants to contain illegal migrants. Critics say the plan is inhumane. Joining us for more on that is John Stepling, an author and commentator from Inderøy, Norway. And we also have Mustafa Fatouri, a Libyan academic and journalist from Tripoli. Gentlemen, welcome. John, if I could start with you, is this UK immigration policy racist, in your opinion, sending or deporting the most vulnerable people to a country that they may never have even heard of before.
Well, of course it's racist. Look, it's also not an accident that the country that was picked out is Rwanda. The leader in human rights violations for all of Africa, run by a sadistic, torturing dictator, genocidal dictator in Paul Kagame. And of course that's where the British would strike a deal. And of course Kagame would accept that deal. He'd sell his mother for a pack of cigarettes, probably. Israel had a very similar plan in 2018 to deport black asylum seekers and immigrants, also to Rwanda, and I believe Uganda. They eventually scrapped the deal because of all sorts of complications and political problems surrounding it. But the hypocrisy of this is amazing, really, when you think about it, because the last two governments in the UK have constantly been the rhetoric of this new green agenda, stop flying, stop driving, but it's okay, we're going to send a bunch of immigrants 3,500 miles away on multiple flights. That's, you know, that's apparently green when they make money on it. But beyond that, of course, this is just pure an extension of colonial policy that has existed for 300 years. Britain was one of the leaders in this colonial policy. Now they work in tandem with the United States, the U.S., who has bases in all but one country, military bases in all but one country in Africa. It is the recolonization of Africa. They deal with the worst governments in Africa, led by Rwanda. It is just jaw-dropping, because they're trying to sell this idea as humane is just nonsensical. It makes no sense. This is you know, in the shadow of Europe's embrace of Ukrainian refugees and all the demands that people sacrifice to accept Ukrainian refugees in this war, proxy war against Russia. Meanwhile, the people seeking asylum from all over Africa are doing so because they are escaping conflict zones created by the West, by the US and UK, by Western economic interests, mining interests, the displacement caused by the mining interests, and the destruction of their communities and,
right, so
and areas of life. And that's so that's what's driving them to escape to the UK.
What do you make of that, Mustafa? If the Western powers, the UK, the United States, and other NATO members had not triggered wars, waged invasions of other countries or conflicts, interfering in other countries' internal affairs, sovereign countries, that is, such as Libya or Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, then there would be no refugees or asylum seekers in the first place.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you again. And I have to say, I'm talking to you from Libya, where the country is considered one of the favorite transit points or transit countries from Africa to Europe, and as well as from other countries in the region, as far away as Pakistan and Afghanistan. But as you have said, you know, had it not been for the, I mean, we understand migration has always been there. It's part of the human history throughout and for the last thousands of years. That's a natural thing. But what is happening now is that most of the migration we see, probably mostly, especially from the sub-Saharan African countries, has to do with the colonial past of these countries, whereby France, the UK, and Portugal, and the Netherlands, and you name it, used to colonize most of Africa, divided up between themselves, and drove these countries who became independent in the 50s and 60s and up to the 70s, like Rwanda and other countries, who became independent, being unable actually to control their own destiny in terms of the economic development as well as political stabilization inside the country, that would fend off against crises like poverty as well as hunger and insecurity.
Right, indeed.
But when it comes to insecurity specifically, it has to do with the foreign powers, specifically the Western powers, as I mentioned before.
Okay, right. Gentlemen, thank you very much indeed. Let me thank our guests for their contribution. John Stepling is an author and commentator. Mustafa Fatouri is a Libyan academic and journalist. And that brings an end to another edition of the News Review. So Israeli violence has claimed the life of another Palestinian in the occupied West Bank. As we noted, reported in this bulletin, the regime's forces opened fire on a Palestinian man near the city of Ramallah. The man was identified as 23-year-old Yazin Omar Jamal Khazib. He succumbed to injuries in hospital. The Israeli military claims Khazib tried to stab the regime's troops. Israeli forces and settlers have ramped up their violence against Palestinians in recent months. The latest death brings to nearly 90 the number of Palestinians killed across the West Bank this year. 17 of those were children. Palestinians across the West Bank and El Quds have staged a 24-hour general strike to slam the recent killings and massacres in Jenin. Now, our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, earlier joined us to shed more light on the killing of a Palestinian youth in the occupied West Bank.
They do not hand his body over quickly to the Palestinian paramedics, but they immediately after his death handed his body over to Palestinian paramedics. As you have mentioned, the number of Palestinians who had been killed by the Israeli soldiers since the beginning of this year is today 89 Palestinians, including some 17 Palestinian minors and children were shot dead by the Israeli forces. Israeli soldiers are always quick to pull the trigger every time, and in many cases Palestinians were killed in cold blood on mere suspicions, and at the end of the day it was clear that they were killed in cold blood without doing anything. But as usual, the Israeli soldiers know very well that they would not be dragged to be prosecuted or to the Israeli courts, and they are supported by the Israeli military establishment, so it's easy for them to shoot and kill Palestinians, claiming that those Palestinians had been attempting or planning to attack Israeli soldiers.
That brings an end to World Bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the modern era, man has reached ever new technological heights unprecedented in history. We can now communicate and interact with those halfway around the world with ease, manage workloads with a click of a finger, or access information and news in a matter of seconds. Perhaps a world without electronic technology would be unimaginable. But this miraculous blessing has a very, very dark and toxic underbelly. I'm Zarin Shajeri, and this is Aperture. The electronic technology we are so dependent on creates waste unseen in the Earth's history. Every year, up to 50 million tons of electronic waste, computers, television sets, mobile phones, and household appliances are thrown away by consumers in the developed countries. 75% of this waste disappears from the legal recycling circuit, much of it dumped illegally in the third world. Stay with us as this week's documentary spans the world to reveal how greed and corruption are ruining the globe's legal recycling systems, damaging the environment, creating security risks, and endangering human health.
We produce up to 50 million tons of e-waste every single year, and our discarded appliances increasingly end up in places like the dump site in Africa. We first came here 3 years ago, while risking serious health problems such as cancer and brain damage. Since then, the situation has worsened dramatically. The amount of e-waste coming into Africa has almost doubled. And also in Europe, South America, and Asia, the discarded symbols of our modern lifestyle are corroding landscapes and poisoning the soil, water, and air.
It's a crime. I mean, this is a crime of mammoth proportions.
E-waste trafficking is huge and said to be bigger than the drugs trade. Even though the export of e-waste has been banned for more than 30 years, thousands of e-waste containers cross the oceans every year. And the toxic tide is set to rise even further, because in spite of the crisis, the sale of electronics is booming and emerging markets are coming on board. All contribute to a growing mountain of e-waste to which we can no longer turn a blind eye.
It's like a doctor looking at a patient bleeding profusely and saying, oh, it's not so bad. When I hear people like that, I say, just go. Just take a plane and go look for yourself and tell me that's not a problem.
All over the world, law enforcement, environmental activists, customs officials, and undercover investigators are fighting to stop the traffickers.
Para ese tipo de personas, el futuro no cuenta. Lo que cuenta es el beneficio inmediato.
The battle is difficult to win because of the huge profits to be made and the corruption involved.
C'est tout un système de montage avec des sociétés écrans. Là, on peut parler de système mafieux.
Can we stop the toxic tide before it is too late? Mike Anane is a Ghanaian environmental journalist and activist. He has made it his personal mission to stop the influx of e-waste to his country. He has discovered that many of the computers dumped here still bear the names of their original owners in Europe and the US.
I'm looking for the asset tags or the property tags. Yes, it gives a lot of indication and provide a clue as to who owned it, who used it.
Mike told me that he had a plan. He wanted to take his collection of tags on a journey of investigation.
The idea is to take these things back to the previous owners, the original owners. And these are e-waste that belong to people in the UK. I'll ask them questions as to how these things got to Ghana, if they have any idea. Somebody has to pay for these things because the environmental and health consequences are enormous. They are killing people here. They should be responsible.
Mike is taking several pieces of e-waste to the UK. The first one originally belonged to Leeds City Council.
Dear Mr. Councillor, my name is Mike Anane. I would like to come and see you to show you what I found and to investigate how your discarded computer equipment found its way to Ghana. This is the moment that I have been waiting for, to listen to their side of the story.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Pleased to meet you. Councillor David Blackburn, if you want to come this way with me.
Okay. I collect the asset tax of some of the e-waste that gets dumped in Ghana.
Royal College of Nursing, yes. HMS Customs at Thames Valley.
South Bank University.
South Bank University, that's in London. So you've got a fair spread of England, you know.
Let me show you the place where I found this equipment.
This is where I keep the e-waste that have asset tags or property tags. You know, when you look at this, for instance, it says Leeds City Council. It should have been disposed of in that city of Leeds.
Terrible, huh? Terrible. Yeah, not acceptable at all. Is this the same all over Africa, or is there specific parts of Africa where we're having problems with it?
We have Nigeria and, of course, Ghana. Yeah, these two countries are the major countries that receive electronic waste.
We've researched as far as we can that particular piece of waste from the serial number they can date it. But, I mean, we're talking 20 years ago, and as I said, at that time, I mean, the ethical, what was thought to be ethical was, we'll recondition them and give them to charities that can't afford their own computers. But I don't think anybody actually thought the thing through, that what happens when it is no longer in use.
The records of the donations no longer exist, so Councillor Blackburn can't tell Mike which computer went to which charity. The trail has gone cold. Mike tries to trace back more of the tags he has found in Ghana.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Anane. I'm trying to reach 212 regarding some recycling issues. Do you have, is anybody around?
Yeah, at the moment, if I see 2-2, it's gone into administration, we'll be taken over by Daisy.
Mm-hmm. All recyclers involved were closed down or sold on years ago.
This number is for sale. For information, call OSA.
After a whole week in the UK trying to trace back the tags, Mike still doesn't know who sent the e-waste to Ghana.
I'm very much disappointed. I have been to several places and the usual excuses, it's been 20 years or we give them to charity. And I find these excuses rather funny. Yeah, because it doesn't take away the problems, it doesn't take away their complicity, and it doesn't take away the fact that they are to be blamed.
Uncovering the e-waste traffic is not as simple as Mike had expected, but he is determined to continue his investigation. E-waste trafficking has been illegal since 1989, when the Basel Convention was signed, the first international treaty banning the trafficking of any kind of toxic waste. To date, 190 countries have signed it, amongst them China and Ghana. The European Union, too, has written the Basel Convention into its laws, prohibiting the export of e-waste. In other words, all EU waste should be recycled in Europe. A system has been designed. In Europe, when a consumer buys a new appliance, the purchase price includes a recycling levy. For instance, the price of a fridge includes a levy of up to 20 euros. Around 4 billion euros are collected this way in Europe every year. This money is used by the industry to run a system which collects, sorts, transports, and recycles our appliances. That's why we can hand them back for recycling for free when we discard them. Thousands of highly specialized recycling plants have been set up all over Europe. Here, the e-waste is treated without harming the workers or the environment. Professional recyclers can get a whole range of valuable materials out of our discarded appliances. But recyclers all over Europe are complaining that their plants are not running to full capacity. And the European Union estimates that at least two-thirds of European e-waste never make it to an official recycling plant. Spain is one of the worst affected countries. So what's going wrong? Belén Ramos works for OQ, Spain's biggest consumer association. She wants to find out why Spanish e-waste is not getting to the recycling plants through an experiment. Belén and her team are installing satellite trackers inside discarded appliances that could have come from any of our homes. In total, 16 pieces have been fitted with trackers. The plan is to hand them in for recycling all over the country and see if they find their way to a recycling plant or not. Soon, all the pieces of e-waste with the hidden trackers inside are distributed all over the country. All of them are sending regular satellite signals. This morning, there is news from the city of Granada, where a computer with a tracker was handed in for recycling. The satellite picture shows clearly that the new location of the computer is an abandoned lot and not a recycling plant. In a country with 26% unemployment and paltry benefits, some have turned to e-waste theft to survive. Security cameras and metal gates failed to deter the thieves. Fences are simply cut to provide access 24 hours. The copper cone inside a TV set can be sold to a scrap dealer for 2 euros. A fridge will yield up to 10 euros, and a system unit 4 euros. But theft from collection points is not the only way e-waste is disappearing. In 2011, the Spanish Environmental Police discovered that 500,000 fridges had been siphoned off the official system and dumped. The case became known as Operation Fragmento, Spain's first high-profile e-waste case. A large criminal network, which included staff at collection points, recycling plants, and transport firms, had taken the recycling levy and then illegally scrapped the fridges. Their profit, 10 million euros. The case is currently pending trial. The final balance of Belén's tracker experiment, only 4 of the 16 pieces made it to authorized recycling plants. All others were scrapped illegally. That's 75%. But none of Belén's trackers have appeared outside of Spain. So how does European e-waste end up in the third world? An answer can be found in France. Here, in March 2010, the Gendarmerie discovered a huge warehouse full of e-waste, tucked away in a small town. Captain Doblemont was in charge of the investigation. So where did all this e-waste come from, and where was it going? D3E Recyclage had collected electronics for recycling from all over the region. Clients included public institutions, hospitals and prisons, and even the gendarmerie itself. The e-waste came flooding in for one reason. Under French law, companies have to pay for their old equipment to be recycled. But D3E offered an irresistible deal. Free recycling of monitors, which would normally have cost around €5 each to recycle. Nobody thought this was a deal too good to be true, because the paperwork provided by D3E Recyclage looked totally convincing. They even listed individual serial numbers, claiming that everything had been recycled according to the law. For several years, D3E operated calmly under the radar. Not a single inspection took place, which would have revealed that they didn't have any recycling equipment whatsoever. D3E may have only been a small company, but they were part of an international e-waste trafficking ring covering three continents. When Captain Doblemont discovered that the waste had left France for Belgium, he contacted Interpol for help. A huge international network began to reveal itself. The French monitors had been sold for between 50 cents and €2 a piece to a company in Belgium called Mobo. The investigators traced the head office of Mobo to Luxembourg. A truly international network was uncovered. Mobo and Luxembourg bought e-waste not only from France, but also from Croatia and the UK. They used a Romanian company for packing and logistics. The e-waste was exported from Holland to Hong Kong, Vietnam, and the Arab Emirates. The shareholders are based in the US, in Delaware, a notorious fiscal paradise. The French e-waste suppliers have been sentenced and their fake recycling company shut down. But Mobo continue to trade, advertising their services on sites such as Alibaba.com, where e-waste from all around the world is traded freely and without borders. Thousands of e-waste containers leave Europe every year. This not only causes environmental damage, it also affects the economy. This was a major reason why, in 2008, the European institutions in Brussels started work on a new, more stringent version of the EU e-waste directive.
10% of all the gold in the world goes to electronics, and most of it then disappears. And the same with silver, with copper.
Every year, Europe dumps millions of tons of e-waste, including the valuable resources inside.
I think everybody needs to wake up to the fact that in 20 or 30 years, the world is going to have a huge resource crisis. And Europe in particular is very vulnerable. We import 6 times more than we export.
Europe currently spends €130 billion a year on importing strategic metals, even though some of this demand could be covered with recycled e-waste instead. This refinery in Belgium extracts copper, tin, silver and gold from old electronics and processes them for resale. 50,000 mobile phones yield 1 kilogram of gold and 10 kilograms of silver, worth about €40,000. Currently, only 1% of mobile phones are recycled in Europe. This means that we're actually sitting on a veritable mine of precious metals and valuable rare earths. In January 2012, the European Parliament passed the new e-waste directive. The new goal is to increase e-waste recycling in Europe by making it easier for consumers to hand back their waste. and by keeping the waste in Europe through stricter export controls at the harbours. But how easy is it to stop an e-waste container from leaving? Mike Anane has travelled to Scotland to meet the Environmental Protection Agency.
Historically, it's been West Africa, primarily Nigeria, but over the last few years we have noticed an increase to Ghana.
What are the usual tricks that these illegal exporters use?
For example, changing the container drop-off point to the last minute so as we can't be there to check, or potentially having material in the first few rows of the container that are working order, but some material sitting behind that that's not working order.
Only functional second-hand equipment can legally be exported from Europe. Everything else is seized.
So do you test every single equipment for functionality?
Not every single equipment. The amount of exports that takes place and the resource, it wouldn't be cost-effective. We have to use our resources effectively.
The team use a video camera to look inside the container and to see if any of the contents look like e-waste.
You were checking a 40-footer container, but the camera was not long enough to the end of the container.
It's another indication. That's why the majority of our effort goes into the use of intelligence and the use of inspections at an earlier stage. We've already had information from that exporter to show that each of the fridges had been tested, but that was a spot check to ensure that the paperwork they'd given us matched up.
Mike is not impressed. The Scottish authorities, making the best of their resources, rely on information from the exporters themselves to stop any illegal shipments. The container was released for export soon after.
For me, I would say that the controls that I saw at the port in Scotland was not good enough. Every single item would have to be checked for functionality, particularly of the contents. If it's refrigerators, if it's television sets or computers, they would have to find out whether they are working in good working order before they're shipped or whether they're just junk.
In spite of all European laws, Europe's harbours are clearly overwhelmed by the sheer number of e-waste containers being exported. But what about a country that produces more e-waste than anyone else on the planet and hasn't banned its export? The US produces a staggering 9.5 million tons of e-waste a year. A lot of this is collected by recyclers, for instance, at so-called recycling rallies, where people are invited to donate their discarded electronics to charity.
I'm not getting fired!
What most people don't know is that a lot of US e-waste is headed straight for the third world.
If you were to go out on the street and ask people, what do you think happens when you take your old computer to a recycler, they'll just say it gets recycled. Very few know that most of these so-called recyclers in the United States don't recycle, they just export.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
Farmud Boris to Lo Ota.
تمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. This is for a better life from IRIB English Radio. I am your host, Sayyid Mahdi Tawakkol. I am at your service to talk about another strategy that helps us enjoy a more appropriate life based on the concepts of the Quran and Islamic narrations. And today's topic is about being thankful to God. Having a decent and correct lifestyle is never separated from being connected to God. If we have only a worldly perspective and neglect the spiritual aspect, we will surely be upset about many things. I mean, if we only pay attention to the material aspect of life, we cannot enjoy a suitable and ideal life. Every blessing we get in life is given to us by God and by Allah's will. So we cannot ignore God's role in life. Without God's permission and without His will, man cannot achieve any result even if he tries his best. This is what a monotheistic man should keep in his mind. A man who has faith in Allah should know that Allah is the source of every blessing, achievements, happiness, and success. This is what Allah says in Surah Nahl, verse 53, وَمَا بِكُم مِّن نِعْمَةٍ فَمِنَ اللَّهِ. And whatever of blessing you have is only from Allah. Therefore, in order to benefit from a better life, we in the first step must improve our relationship with God. As soon as we see that the blessing is coming, we should be totally thankful to Allah. Another fact about the blessings that come to us is that blessings often come to a person gradually, little by little. For instance, it doesn't often happen that a person who needs more money suddenly gains a lot of wealth, or someone who doesn't have a house suddenly gets a big house, or someone who doesn't have a good job gets a lucrative job with a high salary just in a short time. It usually does not happen. God's blessings come to man gradually and step by step. Therefore, when we feel that the doors of divine mercy have been opened to us, and when we sense that the breeze of mercy is blowing, we should increase our relationship with Allah, thank Him, and request Him to give us His mercy more and more. It is quoted from Imam Ali to have said regarding this matter, إِذَا وَصَلَتْ إِلَيْكُمْ أَطْرَافُ النِّعَمْ فَلَا تُنَفِّرُوا أَقْصَاهَا بِقِلَّةِ الشُّكْرِ. When you get only a small favor from God, or in other words, when you sense that the beginning of Allah's mercy is coming to you, do not push them away through the lack of gratefulness. Imam Ali means that when man realizes that the mercy is coming, he should go after it and try harder to benefit more from that blessing, and hope that this beginning will continue and that blessing will become a more complete and a wider blessing. And one of the ways to increase that blessing is to give a full thank to God in the first phase. This is what a wise man should do. I mean by a wise man someone who knows that blessings are always from God. Therefore, a wise man has the duty to consider the role of God very prominently. A wise man doesn't think that a blessing that has come to him is in the form of luck or because he is lucky. Of course, next to thanking Allah, one should also use his efforts to be able to increase that blessing. But however,
Being grateful to Allah should not be dismissed at all. Not thanking God sometimes causes that blessing to go away and man becomes totally deprived. Let me make an example to bring this fact closer to mind. We can say blessings are like a flock of birds. When a number of birds sit on a tree branch, the rest of birds gradually could follow them and fill the branches of the tree. But if the first flock of the birds hears or sees an abnormal sound or become afraid of someone, they run away. And as a result, the rest also follow them and the tree will become empty of them. The blessings are also like this. This is also what Allah says in the Quran in chapter Ibrahim, verse 7. As Allah says, وَإِذْ تَأَذَّنَ رَبُّكُمْ لَإِنْ شَكَرْتُمْ لَأَزِيدَنَّكُمْ. Remember when Allah announced that if you give thanks, I will increase my blessing upon you. وَلَإِنْ كَفَرْتُمْ إِنَّ عَذَابِي لَشَدِيدٌ. And if you are ungrateful, my punishment will be severe. The severity of the punishment can mean that God takes that blessing back from man and never returns it again. Because not giving thanks is a sign that a person does not deserve that blessing. And apparently, God does not give his blessings to unworthy and irresponsible people. Allah's blessings usually come to the competent and qualified people, not those people who would misuse it or disregard the role of God in those blessings. This point should also be noted. In some cases, when we do not show gratitude for God's bounties, the blessings may not be taken away from us, but instead another blessing that we already have may be taken away from us instead.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
For example, if a person is looking for a good job, God encompasses him in his blessing and he may get a call from a good company for an interview. This is natural that this call can be a bridge to get a good job. Here man should thank God and knows that this blessing is from God. But if he ignores the presence and the grace of God, although it could be possible that he would be accepted in that interview and be employed in that company, but in return another blessing may be taken away from him. For instance, he may get sick and loses another source of income and so on and so forth. However, we do not know by being ungrateful what we will miss or when a blessing will be taken away from us. Therefore, reason dictates that we should give thanks for every blessing we have so that at least we do not expose ourselves to divine punishment that could be in the form of deprivation of another blessing. No good nor bad thing will take part in our life by chance. Everything that happens in life is due to a series of reasons. And those reasons are arranged only by the permission of Allah. The role of God should never be ignored in the arrival of blessings and also in the elimination of problems. That even the elimination of problems is another form of blessings as well. Just like the occurrence of an event that brings happiness to a person is a favor from Allah, the disappearance of an unhappiness from life is also a blessing and a favor from Him as well. And in both cases, we have to show gratitude to Allah and do not disregard His role. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land, He knows.
every shade of palm, every closed hand in us, every sparkling tear on every eyelash in us, every thought I have and every word I share.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.